Good morning. It's September 7th, 2015, Labor Day. And this is Janice Sober reading to you from the Decatur Herald Review. So this morning, let's talk about the FDOC group in Lake Shelbyville as they celebrate Labor Day. And it's a group of people on boats. There's a picture of people sitting around, and it looks like almost like a patio, but I don't think it is. And the picture is of Harley Wagehoff, Debbie Wagehoff, Joanne Enders, Wally Shirley, Bill Anders, and Kim Shirley, who is holding Lola. So Lola, I believe, is their Labrador. And from Lake Shelbyville, it could be any nice neighborhood on any sunny morning. Some residents are sitting on their porches, sipping coffee. Some are washing windows, cooking, or doing laundry. Some are retired. Some are working. All are planning for a holiday weekend neighborhood party. The street is FDOC, home to more than 24 households. Houseboats at Lithia Springs Marina on Lake Shelbyville, where residents have gathered every summer for more than two decades. From the third week in April to the third week in October, this is where we are, said Bill Enders, formerly of Mattoon. It's the best decision we could have made. You're in this supportive community with friends. You couldn't ask for anything better. Nancy Bitzer, who manages the family-owned marina, said the houseboat communities make the marina like a small town. Houseboats are on several docks, and the marina provides a small store restaurant and even a little free library shaped like a ship. The different docks are like different neighborhoods, she said. There are other houseboat docks with their own feeling, and the cruisers, who are another group. There's really something for everyone. Bitzer's late mother spent long summers on FDOC, especially after her husband died. Pinky Bitzer was really responsible for starting the whole neighborhood, Joanne Anders said. She held the first parties and invited everyone. One of the residents' most famous stories is the courtship and marriage of Harley and Debbie Wagehoff of Manhattan, Illinois. Both boat owners, they were introduced by the Anders. "We met right here," said Debbie, as she sat on the Anders patio. As our relationship progressed, everyone on FDOC knew all about it. The Wagehoffs eventually married on the dock of a houseboat, surrounded by other boats on the lake. "It may have been the most important party we've ever had," Joanne Anders said. Daily life includes pets. With a wagging tail, Lovey, a golden retriever, has spent his entire life greeting visitors who cross the gangway to the floating neighborhood. "He's been here since he was 8 weeks old," owner Barbara Beals said. "This is his world." The Wagehoff's dog, Lola, ambles from boat to boat, visiting with boat owners. Residents plan events that include regular visits to a Shelbyville Mexican restaurant and a regular 4 p.m. cocktail hour. Jerry Beals said his marina neighbors are often closer than those on his Mattoon Street. "Comparatively, you get to know people better here," he said. "You've got something in common with them, and the boats are close together, so you see each other's comings and goings." That sense of community is part of what attracted Brian and Melissa Beck of Champaign. "We live in a rural area, so we don't really have neighbors to get to know," Melissa said. "This is a place where you can sit on your deck and visit with people as they come and go." "I have a special needs son," Brian Beck said. "He can go up and down the dock all day, visiting with people, carrying things, being helpful. When he had his birthday, everybody gave him a card. You don't find that in many neighborhoods, on the water or land." And that is from Lake Shelbyville as a boat dock community celebrates their holiday. And moving on to local news from Decatur, this is Problems Dry Up. There's a picture here with very large diggers and a pipe and a large channel. It's workers prepare to place a segment of pipe under U.S. 51 in Moquegua as part of the Southern Access Extension Pipeline Project. In Decatur, crews are making progress on the construction of a crude oil pipeline running through the Decatur area on a 167-mile path from Flanagan to Patoka. Construction on the Enbridge's Southern Access Extension, or SACS, pipeline project started in June, but initial progress was slowed due to wet conditions. Since rain has let up in recent weeks, the project has picked up momentum, manager Jared Anderson said. It was a rainy month, said Anderson, who is based in Duluth, Minnesota. We did lose a lot of progress. Weather is the key. But with normal weather, I see no reason it shouldn't be ready for oil by December. Crews have been preparing the right-of-way since last fall. The start of construction had been delayed as details and permitting was worked out as the diameter of the pipe was changed from 36 inches to 24 inches, Anderson said. In 2009, the Illinois Commerce Commission authorized the project, which is running through Livingston, McLean, DeWitt, Macon, Christian, Shelby, Fayette, and Marion counties from Enbridge's Flanagan Terminal near Pontiac to an existing petroleum terminal hub near Patoka. Concerns were raised after construction started, as rainy days continued throughout the early part of the summer, about the condition of farmland. Enbridge officials met in July with the Illinois Farm Bureau and the Illinois Department of Agriculture to address these concerns. Standards are in place for construction projects involving farmland to ensure the land is restored properly. Anderson said the company takes the concern seriously and has secured 60-foot-wide permanent easements for work on the pipeline to be done and for it to remain safely in place. He said the pipe must be placed in trenches dug 5 feet below ground, and nothing permanent can be constructed on top of it in the future. The pipe is being placed in 80-foot sections as crews separate topsoil and subsoil so they don't mix, Anderson said. Enbridge values that protection, Anderson said. We work to restore the land to original conditions, so you won't know the difference. We want to complete the work as safely as possible and leave the land in as good or better condition than we found it. Anderson is confident, given the company's history of building pipelines in Illinois, that crop loss beyond the construction season should be minimal. Nearly 2,000 miles of pipe had been built in the past 10 years throughout the Midwest, with a significant portion coming in Illinois. The benefits of the approximately $900 million project are beginning to show, Anderson said. Decatur is in the middle of the project, which is divided into two sections with separate work crews, he said. Due to its location, the company has an office in Decatur, and a lot of activity with workers and equipment is coming through the area, Anderson said. It's the center of everything, Anderson said about Decatur. A pump station is being constructed on the far west side of town near Warrensburg that Anderson said will be needed to help keep the anticipated 300,000 barrels per day of oil flowing along the finished pipeline. The enclosed building with three pumps is designed to be 42 feet tall with its piping elevator, he said. Without the Decatur pump station, the pipeline would only be able to move half volume, Anderson said. The pump station will be remotely monitored, with 4 to 6 permanent jobs needed mostly for its maintenance, Anderson said. The Decatur pump station is an addition to another being constructed at the Flanagan terminal. The pipeline is putting about 1,300 people to work at the peak of construction, Anderson said. Of those, at least 50% must come from the local community, said Joe Riley, president of the Decatur Building and Construction Trades Council. We want to ensure, as the pipeline goes through, we have an opportunity to work on it, Riley said. Once you get into one of these opportunities, it can lead into a career path. Riley has worked on a previous project, pipeline projects in the area, and has seen how it can lead to more jobs for the workers involved with them. They wouldn't hire us if we couldn't perform the work, Riley said. We're bringing a skilled workforce. We're doing our part. Local workers are able to provide a boost to the economy by having more income to spend on items such as a new refrigerator or new car bought from stores in the area, Riley said. The impact of those who come from out of town is noticeable as they book hotel rooms and eat at restaurants, he said. The work is being done to ensure long-term or it's being a long-term reliable system of transporting oil, Anderson states. He said the extension provides access to Patoka, which is a major hub for oil companies, as much of the oil will stay in the Midwest. Safety during the construction has been important for Enbridge. The Decatur Police Department and Macon County Sheriff's Office earlier this summer cautioned motorists of increased traffic in the 600 block of Southside Drive in Decatur, particularly about 7 a.m. Mondays. Lieutenant Jonathan Butts of the Sheriff's Office said construction vehicles are using the old Zexel facility and asked drivers to be alert to congestion in that area. And that is about the oil pipeline in McLean County. Work being done. And moving on to hive activity. This is gathering promotes honeybee health in agriculture. There's a picture at the beginning of the article that shows Veldon Sorensen of Bayer Bee Care, shows members of the Brazilian group Amagi, the queen bee, in an observation hive at the Bayer Crop Science tent during the Farm Progress Show. And this is a large, beautiful wood case with a glass door. And the bees are interacting, of course, inside the glass door. And it would be Veldon Sorensen is highlighting the queen bee. You can see he's shining a flashlight on it, a small flashlight. So this is from Decatur, apparently the Farm Progress Show. Jerry Hayes wants to find a way to bridge the gap between the needs of production, agriculture, and feeding the world. At the center of Hayes' mission working for Monsanto is improving honeybee health, which he said is seen as a vital but sometimes overlooked part of the economy. We want to bring value to beekeeping that hasn't been brought before, Hayes said Thursday evening while speaking to members of Sangamon Valley Beekeepers Association during the group's monthly meeting at the Richland Community College. Hayes had been at the Farm Progress Show sharing information with visitors, particularly farmers, about what they can do to protect such an important agricultural tool. He later spoke to the group that ranged from beginning to experienced beekeepers from around the Decatur area and answered their questions about bee health. Most are hobbyists, said Don Miller of Decatur, who is president of the Sangamon Valley Beekeepers Association. They find bee culture fascinating. You get mesmerized when watching the traffic coming and going. It's a moving mass with complex organisms. Hayes has worked at Monsanto for the past 3 years, but has yet to invent anything, as his focus is on education and raising awareness about the issue. He said having large agricultural businesses, including Monsanto, supporting honeybee research will be beneficial. Bayer Crop Science also was promoting honeybee health throughout the Farm Progress Show with displays inside the main gate of the Progress City and at its tent. A lot of things can impact honeybee health, Hayes said. No farmer wants to hurt honeybees. Farmers can work with beekeepers to develop a trusting relationship and promote bee health by giving bees sufficient opportunities to thrive, Hayes said. Production agriculture fields aren't a natural source of food for honeybees. Hayes said the mowing and landscaping of lawns doesn't always help either, with an abundance of herbicides and pesticides applied. He said at least a corner or patch of a yard could be left to help provide a healthy area for honeybees. Miller wanted to bring Hayes in to speak to the group to provide information about what has become a complex issue. Students from the Richland Community or Culinary Arts Program prepared a dinner before Hayes' presentation that included honey-roasted tomato bruschetta, grilled chicken breast with honey barbecue sauce, or honey soy glazed salmon, and apple galette with salted honey ice cream for dessert. We are trying to show an appreciation for how much research companies are doing trying to figure out the puzzle, Miller said. The reality is a lot of money is on the line. Honeybee health is just one of the areas in which Bayer is trying to provide agricultural innovation. Now people... I backtracked just a little bit here. Now people have become interested in bees, said Becky Langer, Bayer's North American Bee Care Program Director for Honeybee and Pollinator Health. Bees are responsible for one-third of our diet, either directly or indirectly. We need to use the land to the best of our ability. The types of healthy foods consumers want, such as fruits, nuts, and vegetables, are due available to pollination from bees, Langer said. She said it's best to let bees do their work, as that is what they're focused on doing, as they're usually job-oriented. Providing forage for bees can help. Every little bit can make a difference, Langer said. It all builds up to make a difference. Bayer places an emphasis on research and development throughout agriculture, as CEO and President Jim Bloom said it spends about $1 billion on research and development every year. Consumers demand we produce food in a safe, sustainable way, Bloom said. We're continuing to invest in new ideas and have new procedures and new products coming out of our pipeline. The agricultural industry is becoming increasingly pressured to meet the needs of a growing world population, said David Holenrake, Bayer Vice President for Agricultural Commercial Operations Marketing. We've got a big challenge ahead of us, Holenrake said. We can't do that without innovation. Holenrake said a general mistrust of modern agricultural practices exists, so the company used the Farm Progress Show as a launching point for a new societal engagement program called Advocacy. The company has trained nearly 1,000 of its employees as it begins to reach out and start conversations about the benefit of agriculture. Bayer had a wall in its tent at Progress City, on which it asked visitors to put their handprint to show support for its efforts. By the end of the show, the wall had more than 3,000 handprints on it. They know it's about empowering the future of agriculture, Holenrake said. It's about changing the dialogue. Holenrake said farmers will be leading many of the conversations as the agriculture industry needs to better connect with consumers. He said the company is looking for more than 15 years ahead for the advances that could impact the agricultural industry. And that was from the Farm Progress Show. And I see an article about Decatur's newest postmaster. Comes from a postal family. And this is a picture of James Cleaver Jr. stands with his daughter Brianna Cleaver, 6. While he is sworn in as the new postmaster of Decatur by Nancy Theobald, Gateway District Senior Manager of Post Office Operations in Central Park. James F. Cleaver, Jr. was sworn in as the 36th postmaster for Decatur on Friday in Central Park on an afternoon with just enough breeze to keep it from being too stuffy for comfort. His 6-year-old daughter, Brianna, held the Bible for him and had written a speech to read to him, which she declined to share with anyone but her father. Cleaver comes from a postal family, as he phrased it, and began working as a part-time owner and carrier for Decatur's downtown post office 21 years ago. Thanks to the influence of his father, James Cleaver Sr., who retired as a supervisor in Springfield, the senior Cleaver joked that his son needed a job, so he recommended taking the Postal Service exam. He worked his way up through various supervisory positions, including a stint in Springfield. And when the postmaster position in Decatur opened, he applied. He'll be responsible for oversight of the downtown and Memorial Station offices, plus Niantic, Harristown, Elwyn, and Booty. He told the group who attended his swearing-in ceremony that he hopes to provide the best customer service possible. Decatur Post Office values your business and knows you rely on us and trust us, Cleaver said. And we want to be your mail service provider of choice, not most of the time, but every time. City Council member Pat McDaniel said technology is supposed to bring people together, but most often has the opposite effect, and Americans are losing respect for most government bodies, with one exception, the Postal Service. You know how many citizens look forward each and every day to seeing their trusted U.S. postal carrier walking down the street, going door to door in all kinds of weather to deliver the mail. Mail that for many is the only contact with the outside world they have, McDaniel said. Springfield Postmaster Israel Hilton said he'd known Cleaver for years, and because their children are about the same age, they often compared notes about things that make them tear their hair out. That's why we don't have much left, Hilton quipped. Jim is very competent, and I'm sure glad you came back to Decatur. So that's the news from the Post Office Service in Decatur, the new postmaster. Newest postmaster appointment. And this is a local story about, I think her name is Amanda Ware. And it said, Ware's demeanor during drownings remain testimony in focus. And in Chicago, two former DeWitt County deputies were the last witnesses called by the state Friday. In its effort to keep the three children born to Amanda Ware since the 2003 deaths of her previous youngsters in Clinton Lake from returning home. Ware was known as Amanda Ham when she and her former boyfriend, Morris Legrone, were accused of murder in the deaths of her children, ages 6, 3, and 1, during a drowning at Clinton Lake. She was convicted of child endangerment, and Legrone, who was driving, was found guilty of murder, for which he is serving a life sentence. The Illinois Department of Children and Family Services removed two daughters, now ages five and three, and an 18-month-old son, from Ware and her husband, Leo Ware. In March 2014, after a doctor recognized her as the woman accused in the drowning case. On Friday, former DeWitt County Sheriff's Deputy Timothy Collins testified about Ware's failure to rescue her children as the car sped into the lake. I didn't see her do anything around the vehicle, Collins told Cook County Associate Judge Demetrios Kataras, the family court judge who will rule next month on the state's petition to retain custody of the children. Ware and Legrone told police the car went into the lake accidentally after it pulled close to the water on a boat ramp, with the car facing the lake as a prank to scare the children. The defense at her murder trial argued that Legrone likely put the car in drive rather than reverse as he looked over his shoulder to back up the ramp and could not alter its course as it sped into the lake. The car was in reverse when it was found. And let's see, Collins was one of the several emergency workers who pulled the three children from the car within 5 minutes after they responded to a 911 call from Ware. Among Collins's recollections were the dozen or so small handprints he saw inside the rear window of the car, presumably left by the children as they yelled for help from their mother. Ware's demeanor after the drownings, an issue at separate trials held in 2006, was raised by Cook County Assistant State's Attorney Gina Perdue on Friday. When asked how Ware acted at the hospital, where her children were rushed for medical treatment that ultimately failed, Collins said she was following what her mother did, referring to times Ware's mother was visibly distraught during the ordeal. Lawyers for the Wares continued their efforts Friday to add more details from the 2003 police investigation than the negative elements highlighted by prosecutors. In testimony from former DeWitt County Sheriff's Detective Rick Hahn, the defense elicited specific remarks Ware made as she saw her deceased sons at the hospital for the last time, including, "I never wanted anything to happen to you." The state has largely focused its case on the allegations lodged against Ware in 2003 and her history of mental health and substance abuse issues. Leo Ware's criminal and drug history have been used to support the state's contention that he also is an unsuitable parent. After the hearing, Leo Ware said he wants his children to come home to what were taken away from a loving home. We were happy. They were happy before all this. The trial will continue Thursday, September 10th, when the defense is expected to call Ware's mother, Ann Powers, and five other witnesses to counter the state's claims. The three children are with a member of Leo Ware's family. And that's from a case that happened several years back. And this is an incident in Charleston. Larry Steeples. It says, Steeples sentenced to life for the murder of a Charleston woman. Saying Larry Steeples acted out of a sense of revenge, a sense for retribution, a judge Friday ordered him to serve a life prison sentence for shooting and killing Gina Gibbardson. Steeples acted as if he had the right to kill another individual, and if any other sentence would diminish the concept of justice, and any other sentence would diminish the concept of justice, Circuit Judge Mitchell Schick said while imposing the sentence. As a jury did last month, Schick rejected Steeples' claim of self-defense during the April 7, 2014 shooting death of Gibbardson at her Charleston home. The only evidence that Steeples needed to defend himself was his own self-serving statement that Gina Gibbardson was a threat. Steeples, 54, showed no reaction when Schick announced a decision on the sentence for the first-degree murder conviction. The jury handed down at the end of the trial. In spite of what the jury handed down, he showed no reaction. Some members of Gibbardson's and Steeples' families began crying when Schick ordered the life sentence. Steeples never denied that he shot Gibbardson, with whom he had been involved in a combative romantic relationship. He claimed he was first invited to her home. She forced him to leave after an argument, and he then broke back in. He found Gibbardson with a gun and shot her after taking it from her and trying to defend himself. But on Friday, Schick agreed more with the prosecutor's theory that Steeples was angered about Gibbardson's involvement with another man, Lee Conover, and about a fight with Conover at a Charleston tavern in a few weeks earlier that ended with Steeples' throat slashed. Steeples declined his chance to make a statement to Schick, saying, I've got nothing to say about her. When Schick told him that today's not about you, and he could say what he wanted, Steeples again said, I've got nothing to say. The conviction and sentence mean Steeples has no chance for parole unless something changes in appeal. Schick scheduled a hearing for Friday for an expected motion to reconsider the sentence. A first-degree murder conviction requires a minimum sentence of 20 years in prison, but when a gun was used, another 25 years has to be added. Steeples was arrested at Gibbardson's home immediately after the shooting and has been jailed since then. So that is a local murder issue from Charleston. And going on to Decatur Day welcomes community to the Farm Progress. And there's a picture here of Decatur Macon County City Limitless Ambassadors. Christina Baker, Emily Phillips, and Wes Hillen help visitors get oriented at the main entrance during Farm Progress Show at Progress City, USA. Kyle Wise of Decatur knew it was a big show and a big deal, but he hadn't been to the event in person until this week. He's a retired farmer, and he came away with a better appreciation for it, so much so that he was helping greet visitors Thursday, coming into the main gates of Progress City, USA. He had thought of it in terms of Decatur celebration, but said Farm Progress far exceeds that in size and shape. There's something for everybody, Wise said. It's cool. They come from all over the world to see it. This is to the other ambassadors. And the Limitless Community Marketing received a tour from the Farm Progress Management that would interest visitors during the show. And that's all for today. This is Janice Sober reading on September 7th, Labor Day, and wishing you all a good holiday. We've been reading from the Decatur Herald Review. Thank you and goodbye.